Psalm 55, 405 in the Red Pew Bibles. Listen to my prayer, O God. Do not ignore my plea. Hear me and answer me. My thoughts trouble me, and I am distraught because of what my enemy is saying, because of the threats of the wicked, for they bring down suffering on me and assail me in their anger. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death have fallen on me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. I said, "Oh, that I had the wings of a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. I would flee far away and stay in the desert. I would hurry to my place of shelter, far from the tempest and storm. Lord, confuse the wicked, confound their words, for I see violence and strife in the city. Day and night they prowl about on its walls. Malice and abuse are within it. Destructive forces are at work in the city. Threats and lies never leave its streets. If an enemy was insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe was rising against me, I could hide. But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship at the house of God, as we walked about amongst the worshippers. Let death take my enemies by surprise. Let them go down alive to the realm of the dead, for evil finds lodging among them. As for me, I call to God, and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, and noon I cry out in distress, and he hears my voice. He rescues me unharmed from the battle waged against me, even though many oppose me. God, who is enthroned from old, who does not change, he will hear them and humble them, because they have no fear of God. My companion attacks his friends. He violates his covenant. His talk is smooth as butter, yet war is in his heart. His words are more soothing than oil, yet they are drawn swords. Cast your cares on the Lord, and he will sustain you. He will never let the righteous be shaken. But you, God, will bring down the wicked into the pit of decay. The bloodthirsty and deceitful will not live out half their days. But as for me, I trust in you." Amen.
Thank you, Denise. Well, good morning. You'll find it very helpful to keep your Bibles handy. We're going to look at a number of different references today. Well, today we've come to the seventh and the last of what we can call the main sequence of the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5 that tell us about the growth we should see in Christian character. There is one more Beatitude to come in the series, but that is one that speaks uniquely about the result of Christian character rather than the hallmarks, and we'll look at that one separately in the new year. Well, this last distinguishing mark of Christian character growth we find in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 9, which says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God." And this beatitude is given seventh and finally in the list because it builds on those that have gone before. We've noted previously that there's a very definite order to how the beatitudes are given. And again, I haven't got time to pull this out again now, but do listen to the other messages online. Or once again, I recommend Colin Smith's excellent book called Momentum if you want to delve deeper. Those who prefer something even meatier than that, Thomas Watson, the Puritan, wrote a book called The Beatitudes, which I'd also recommend. Now, because this is the last of the character Beatitudes, we shouldn't really be surprised to find that it's a rare commodity, that real peacemakers are few and far between. And I think we'd all agree that there is precious little peace in our world. You only need to watch the news headlines to know the truth of that. There is so much hatred and anger and bitterness, and there is so much hatred and anger and bitterness in the world because there is so much conflict and strife in the heart of mankind. And this is not a new phenomenon. In the psalm that we've just read, King David is lamenting the state of his society, his violence and strife in the city that he sees. And this is the city of God, no less. And as is so often the case, the problems weren't coming from an external enemy, but from within. Verses 12 to 14, if an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were raising himself against me, I could hide from him. But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship as we walk with the throng in the house of God. The really sad thing about this whole state of affairs for David is that the roots of this strife lay within his own family. His son Absalom would openly rebel, and David was left to groan at the fracturing not only of his own family, but of his nation, of a people who were brought to the verge of a bloody civil war. And that pain of betrayal is one that I'm sure will be familiar to many here today. Perhaps you've been let down by somebody in your family, by a business partner, maybe by somebody in the church even. You've been let down by somebody who matches the description of the character we read about in verses 20 and 21. My companion attacks his friends. He violates his covenant. His speech is as smooth as butter, yet war is in his heart. His words are more soothing than oil, and yet they are drawn swords. And of course, it's added to this natural tendency of the human nature such things, we also have a restless enemy in Satan who loves to stir up discontent and bitterness and division, especially in the family and in the church. Thomas Watson said that Satan kindles the fire of contention in men's hearts and then stands and warms himself at the fire. This can be a tough and aggressive and a hostile world sometimes, can't it? And sometimes it looks as if only the strong and the ruthless, the mean, can survive and thrive, that the good and the innocent get crushed. And if that's been a concern of yours, you're far from alone. If you read the rest of the Psalms, you'll see that this is one of the great laments of the writers, until they understand the end for both the righteous and the wicked. But for now, as we live in this world, what is our response to be? I guess the first question we should ask ourselves is, how do we normally react when we're in conflict or stressful situations? What's our go-to behaviour? What is our character like? What's our tendency? Do we have a calming influence? Or do we kind of go in with all guns blazing and add fuel to the fire? Does the red mist descend? In other words, do we become a part of the problem rather than being the channel for the solution that we're supposed to be? We are called to bring peace, to make peace. Peace in our homes, peace in our workplaces or schools, peace in our church. We're called to be those who make things better. And it's not an optional add-on to the Christian life. It's a command from God. 1 Corinthians 7:15. God has called us to live in peace. In other words, this is something that we have to be very intentional about. We need to be intentional about getting a heart like this, and then intentional about preserving and developing it further. And as with the other Beatitudes, it is not effortless nor cost-free. We have to plan for it. We have to work for it. Hebrews 12:14, make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy. It takes effort. And the peace we're talking about isn't even just the absence of open conflict, like a temporary ceasefire, if you like. The root word will be familiar to many of us. It's the word shalom. And it conveys a meaning of active enjoyment of all that is good. You know, it strikes me as we've gone through the Beatitudes that we've constantly seen how high Jesus sets the bar. They just can't be reduced to a set of external rules and observances. They're matters of the heart, the core of our inmost being, if you remember. So just putting on an act does not suffice. If you want to be miserable, go be religious. But if you want to know the life and the joy of the Lord, his promised blessings, then pray for such a heart as we've been discovering throughout this series that we need. The heart that is blessed in so many ways by so many great promises from the Lord. But what does it mean to be a peacemaker? And why are we called sons of God? You know, in summary, in a nutshell, peacemakers are simply those who bring peace to others. That's it, they bring peace to others. And they can do that because they have peace in themselves. If we don't have peace in ourselves, we will not be equipped to bring peace to others. And how do we get it? Well, it flows from a pure heart, from being holy. Remember last time we looked at how a pure heart is one that is focused, it's undivided. The impure person is double-minded. There's an inherent conflict within them. He or she wants contradictory things at the same time, like Mr. Facing Both Ways in Pilgrim's Progress. James 1:8 tells us that such a person is unstable in all he does, and there can be no peace while that sort of conflict rages within us. James 4:1-2, what causes fights and quarrels amongst you? Don't they come from the desires that battle within you? You want something but don't get it. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You quarrel and fight. In other words, it comes from within. Peacemakers bring peace and joy to others because they have it within themselves to give. And the more purity we have, the more single-minded we are in our devotion to Christ, the more peace we get to enjoy and to share. But we should note firstly that it will not always be reciprocated. The sad fact is that David would never be reconciled to his beloved son Absalom, who would be killed in battle against his father's army. And perhaps you can think of a relationship that couldn't be repaired despite your best efforts. That is sadly going to happen sometimes, but it shouldn't change our approach. You know, when I coach people, sometimes I get them to make a distinction between good desires and good goals. I've shared this with some of you before. You might remember the difference. You know, a desire might be pure and noble and true, but it can be frustrated by other people. For example, I desire to have a godly home with perfectly behaved children who always tidy their rooms, who fall over themselves to offer to wash up and cut the lawns and things like that. I am an optimist. And we might try to apply ourselves to make these things happen. But who can frustrate our desires? And they will. I can tell you from experience. But if we focus more on our goals that we have the power to achieve, we will experience far less stress and more peace. So, for example, our goal instead might be to be the best possible husband or father or mother that we can be. I mean, who can stop us from achieving that? Only ourselves. We might desire the conversion of a family member or a friend, and that's a great desire to pray for and to work for, to seek earnestly. But we can't make it happen. We can make it our goal, though, to be the best possible witness. And it's the same with being a peacemaker. Paul acknowledges this in Romans 12:18. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. He knows that even our best efforts can and sometimes will be frustrated by others. So no, being a peacemaker will not always be reciprocated. And in fact, we're told in the Bible that pure peace will not be attainable until Jesus returns again. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, Mark 13. But it must still be our goal to be peacemakers and to fulfill all that God has for us to do until that day. It is a tough calling. It's why it's the last of the sought-after Beatitudes, and it is why it is so rare. And like others, there will be limits to what we can achieve in this life. Peace will never be perfectly experienced by us, internally or externally. Some Christians spend way too much time just being hard on themselves. You know, they understand correctly that they're not what they should be. But they don't enjoy the peace of forgiveness and grace. They're too busy looking at themselves all the time and bemoaning their state. Others go further. They don't see what God could really do in and through them at all. We looked at this last time, if you remember. They can't picture themselves being any different. And so they don't have much joy or peace either. Colin Smith put this very succinctly. I'll tailor what he said. But he said this was a healthy approach. Embrace the aim. Understand the limits. You will not be perfect in this life. But then go and do all that you can possibly do anyway. And as we do that, we will be blessed. We'll be happy, content, satisfied. Lord, help me to be at peace and make me to be a peacemaker as much as I can be in this fallen world is a good prayer. And this is a godly attribute to be pursuing. The Lord himself is called the God of peace in Hebrews 13. In the Trinity, there's no tension, no stress, no conflict, just perfect love, peace, perfect harmony. Jesus has the title Prince of Peace in Isaiah chapter 9. He came to bring us peace with God through his blood in Colossians 1. The Holy Spirit is a symbol of peace in Matthew 3:16 when he descended as a dove. So when we are peacemakers, we are displaying his likeness. And that is why peacemakers are called the sons of God. We have a saying ourselves, don't we? Like father, like son. That's what it means. Why are peacemakers called sons of God? Because they reflect his likeness, the God of true peace. But how do we do this? What are some of the practical steps that we can take to grow in this? I think the first one is one that is often overlooked. And it's to acknowledge the depth of the problem. In Jeremiah 6:14, we read that there is such a thing as a false peace. They dress the wound of my people as though it were not serious. Peace, peace, they say, when there is no peace. You know, we often want to believe that all is well, but sometimes it isn't. Be that in relations between nations, or in families, or even within ourselves. Some don't want to address the issue of the Bible and evolution, or sexuality, or the uniqueness of Christ, because they want to maintain a facade of peace. But making peace doesn't mean anything for a quiet life. In fact, it actually causes conflict sometimes, because it demands true peace. And just like a painful operation may be necessary to remove a disease, so sometimes there has to be a divine surgery to achieve true peace. It's telling that there was actually a false peace between David and his son Absalom before the rebellion. One of David's great failings as a father was that he never got to the heart of the issue with his son. He loved him dearly, but he loved him blindly. So we're not to blow things out of all proportion, but we're not to downplay serious situations either. We need honesty and courage and discernment and integrity if we are going to be peacemakers. Secondly, deal with conflict early when it arises. Don't let it fester. Avoided conflict is usually just postponed conflict, and when it does come back, it will be worse than ever. David's failure to deal with his son Absalom early led to a downward spiral that resulted in death and destruction. I see this pattern a lot as a consultant as well, actually. Many people have a right desire to show others that they value them. They have a reluctance to appear unreasonable, and honestly, there's sometimes a fear of legal action mixed in with this as well. And it causes many a leader to brush problems under the carpet in the hope that they will somehow just sort themselves out. They don't. And the longer they are left, the more damage that tends to be done. It's the same principle in the family or the church. Ephesians 4:26 to 27. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Do not give the devil a foothold. Deal with something when you know it has to be dealt with. It may be hard and difficult and uncomfortable, but the earlier you do it, the less hard it will be. Now, I have to give a bit of a health warning with this and a note of caution. This doesn't mean, of course, that we should jump on everything and everyone straight away every time. I'm sure you get that. There are some people who head into difficult situations almost cheering and with the wrong motive. They want to fight. They want to show that they're right. And they tend to attract trouble. Obviously, that's not what we are called to do. We move towards trouble, but we do so with a noble intention. Colin Smith also related some advice he once received when he was starting out as a pastor. The advice was, always move towards the barking dog. Now, that doesn't sound like very appealing advice to me, and I'm sure it doesn't to you. If a dog's barking at us, especially if it's a big one, our natural tendency is to move away. But that's not what Jesus did. When he was being attacked, he moved towards us, not away. He moved towards us right to the cross. Excuse me a moment. It is a paradox that peacemakers, in the Christian sense, actually cause trouble in the pursuit of that peace and of what is good and proper. We'll see something of how that plays out next year when we look at the final beatitude. Jesus himself, the Prince of Peace, told us, though, that he came not to bring peace, but a sword in Matthew chapter 10. In other words, Christ is an incredibly divisive person. The effect of a Christian witness in a family can cause untold division. It can set father against son, mother against daughter, and so on. When Jesus came and preached his message of peace, trouble flared. You need only read the testimonies from ministries like Open Doors. Testimonies that tell of men and women facing terrible persecution, often from with their own families, all for the crime of preaching the gospel of peace. Jesus didn't shrink back when that happened, and nor must we. We don't go looking for trouble. We don't want the martyr complex where we seek it out. But we must understand it will sometimes be the consequence of preaching the divisive message of the peace of Christ. And you see again here how different the real Christian is from the weak and pathetic image that so many in this world have of us. This takes real love, real faith, real courage. It is challenging, it is risky, and it can be costly. It is no wonder that in that great faith chapter in Hebrews chapter 12, when we read about the sufferings of our forefathers, that we're told that the world was not worthy of them. Thirdly, don't stand on your rights. Have you noticed how concerned everybody is today about their rights? People defend them vigorously. In an argument, the first thing you'll sometimes hear is, I know my rights. Jesus laid aside his rights and his majesty to bring us peace. And he had to descend far lower than you or I will ever be called to do. From the very glories of heaven to the brutality of the cross. As Martin Lloyd-Jones said, if God stood upon his rights and dignity, upon his person, every one of us would be consigned to hell and absolute perdition. Now, there might be times when it's right to insist on our rights. Paul used his Roman citizenship to avoid a flogging. But there are times when it is simply not helpful to do so if we're trying to bring peace. It hurts to do that. It's not easy. But when it's costly, let us just remember what Christ did for us. However low we have to go, we'll never have to go as low as he did. There's an illustration I heard about John Newton gave when he was preaching, actually. I'm going to share with you. I'll bring it up to date so we can relate to it a little bit easier. He said, imagine a man who's just found out that he's going to inherit a multi-billion pound corporation. And to inherit it, he just has to drive 10 miles down the road to the company headquarters, get the documents, and it's all his. So you can imagine he sets off in fine spirits. But he hits traffic. And then he gets diverted. And then he gets a flat tire. And it starts to rain as he's changing the tire. And he starts to grumble, why me? What are the odds, which I understand is what teenagers say a little bit at the moment. What are the odds? God, do you even care? What would you think about a man like that, given what awaits him and how short the journey is? And actually, isn't that what we do? Our journey is short. Our inheritance is worth much more than a mere multi-billion dollar company. And yet, don't we give over to grumbling so easily sometimes? This life is hard. It does hurt sometimes. We don't minimize that. But if we understand our inheritance in Christ, if we know what waits for us, it will never seem too much. The price will never seem too high. Fourthly, practice restraint, especially of the tongue. I think many of us take this one to heart. James chapter 1, verse 19. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. There are people we meet, aren't there, who say things like, they take great pride in saying, I always say what I think, as if that is somehow noble and helpful. Courageously addressing the issues does not mean letting fly with unguarded, ill-considered words or actions. 1 Peter 3:9, do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult, but with blessing, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. A true peacemaker will hold back and be prudent in word and action. They won't take easy offence. What would happen if God unloaded everything on us every time we sinned? So we practice restraint. Next, pass up on opportunities for revenge. This is a tough one as well, isn't it, sometimes? I mean, the one who has wronged you is suddenly within your power or grasp. Maybe you've been promoted over them. What do you do? Being a peacemaker does not mean be foolishly naive, but it does mean we have to control the natural desire within us for personal revenge when we're wrong. to turn the other cheek. Once again, just as Jesus modelled. It is not always wise or right to fail to deal with offences. If you're in education or the military or the police or many other professions, you will know the need to do that if you're to perform your duties, if you're a parent even. I guess it's really a question of the motive. Why do we do it? Are we really thinking of the good of others, of the witness of the gospel, or is it to make us feel better, feel more vindicated? The command to love our enemies is probably one of the hardest commands that we have. But it's also probably the most powerful witness that we can give to a world where it is so contrary to what normally happens. And I'm sure as well when it comes down to it, each one of us here, certainly those of us with a few years, have seriously offended others sometimes through our own faults, haven't we? And when we've done so, if we've had the experience of somebody showing us mercy and peace, hasn't that made a terrific impact on us? You know, in last week's evening service, Morris gave us the story about the South African policeman who brutally tortured and killed a boy and his father, and of the mercy that boy's mother showed to him at the Truth and Reconciliation hearings, and the effect that that had. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is often misused to justify petty personal revenge. It is in the Bible, it's in Exodus 21 verse 24. But the context there makes it very clear that God is talking about the national justice system and the punishment of lawbreakers imposed by a court. It was never given to justify or provide justification for personal vengeance. If we want to be peacemakers, we have to be willing to say no to personal revenge. And to do so, not grudgingly, but willingly, out of a love for God and a love for others. And yes, sometimes that hurts, and yes, sometimes that costs, and the temptation, the pull to do otherwise, is often very great. But we have been saved at a very great price, and we have been saved for far more noble things than that. There are sadly so many examples of what happens when we don't do that. Family feuds over generations, nations with centuries of hostility. Just look at the history of the recent Kosovo conflict if you want to understand that a little bit more. Why not be the one that says, it stops here, and entrust God with the injustices that you've suffered? Six, love unconditionally, whether your love is reciprocated or not. Sometimes that love and peace will be reciprocated, sometimes it will not, as we've noted. Romans 5:8, well, we're still sinners, Christ died for us. Do all respond to that? Sadly, no. But some did, and more will. We will never know peace in ourselves, nor be a channel for it to others, if we start to ration who we think we should love. And again, that doesn't mean we trust people naively, but we must love all and act accordingly. If you're in a good and healthy family, your calling is to do what you can to maintain those relationships, to keep it that way. If your family has damaged relationships, your calling is to do what you can do to make it better, however others respond. It's the same in the church. Ephesians 4:3, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. It's the same at school. It's the same in the workplace, the golf club, whatever situation we find ourselves in. Our calling is clear, and it is to be an agent of peace. Seventh and finally, take care of the company that you keep. Trouble does seem to follow some people around, doesn't it? It goes with them everywhere because it's what's in them. And we find out what's in us when something happens to us. When we get cut up in traffic. When somebody bumps into us or scrapes the car. It could be anything. And what comes out is a spillover of what's inside. And if we hang out with people that are always angry and confrontational in situations like that, we will be affected. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Bad company corrupts good character. It is a sober warning. Even those of us who think we are a little bit mature and advanced in years again, we can still be impacted by others. Well, what difference does all this really make, though? Some years ago, I travelled to Santa Monica in California, and it's named, unsurprisingly, after somebody who's called Saint Monica. And we don't know a great deal about her, apart from the fact that she was a tremendously gracious Christian woman. As a young girl, she was already a devout Christian. And she was married, almost certainly against her wishes, to a pagan Roman official who was not a particularly nice character. She served him as a faithful wife. She was respectful and obedient, and she prayed hard for him. They had a son. The son went off the rails. In fact, he went so far off the rails, he couldn't even see the rails anymore. She prayed for him, and she wept for him, and she set the example for him. He eventually came to Christ. We know him as Augustine, one of the early church fathers, the one who inspired many of the reformers, actually, in the way they developed as well. She was faithful. Her husband became a Christian before he died as well. And she did some of the things we've just been looking at. One step at a time, one day at a time, being a peacemaker, spreading holiness. That's what she did. And that's what we're called to as well. As we come to a close today, I guess the question we need to ask ourselves is, what step is it that we can do when we leave here today and the conflict situation we find ourselves in? What can we do that will be well received by the one who's offended us? If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If thirsty, give him a drink. Maybe it will be appropriate for you to take the first step back from a confrontation to be the peacemaker. It's a hard choice. It's hard, isn't it? But it is a choice, and we can choose to do that. Well, as I come to a close, I just want to share briefly one more encouragement with you. Colin Smith also did a series of messages on heaven, and he said that when he'd done that, the most popular question he got asked was, will we know each other in heaven? Followed by, what about those that we parted with on bad terms? We know they were saved, but the relationship was so damaged. What will happen when we see them again? There'll be some here doubtless wondering the same thing. This is what he said. How long do you think it will take for a full reconciliation to take place when you're standing there, fully sanctified and glorified, and the other person is standing there, fully sanctified and glorified as well, and you're both in the presence of Christ? How long do you think it will take for the past to be wiped away, for all the bitterness and discomfort to go? And he said, I'm going for in the blink of an eye. I agree with him. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Let's take a moment to think about the application of this.